This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Today, we look at the ability to speak multiple languages. Do we value this as a community? And what are the benefits and challenges of dual language education programs? And exactly who are we talking about when we say English language learners? We'd like to hear from you this morning. The number to call in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. Or you can send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. Joining us this morning to discuss dual language education in New Mexico are David Rogers. He is executive director of the nonprofit Dual Language Education New Mexico. And by phone today from Clovis, David Briceño, executive director of the New Mexico Association for Bilingual Education. I've also invited a representative from the State Public Education Department. We may be hearing from them this morning, possibly. And thanks so much for joining us this morning, the two Davids. I'm going to call David Rogers David, and I'm going to call David Briceño David in honor of the bilingual conversation we're having this morning, and in order to kind of keep you two straight during our conversation. Good morning. Thanks to both of you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Elaine.
David.
Thank you, Elaine. Good morning.
Great. Thank you. David Rogers, I'd like to start with you. Your organization, Dual Language Education New Mexico, has a mission to support and develop successful dual language education programs in New Mexico. You do trainings, you put on conferences, you coordinate opportunities for advancement of dual language projects and programs. What is the hot topic right now in your field? What is getting educators excited right now?
Well, I think it's probably energizing our school communities now when it comes to bilingual education and dual language education included is this idea that as a nation, as a country, we should be bringing this idea of multilingual, multicultural development in our students to any student or all students and all families that want to have an opportunity to fully develop not only to succeed academically in school, but also to develop this at least two languages at an academic proficiency level, as well as learn about and learn with children that come from distinct cultural backgrounds and develop what we call multicultural competency. And this is something that it seems all civilized, developed countries in the world have embraced for many years. And we seem to be – I shouldn't say we seem to be. We are behind the times in this. We're the only country, I think, that has a nationalistic attitude in general that English is the only language that's of importance. And certainly we know from what we read and what we share with folks from around the world, including here in North America alone, that the attitude is much different in Canada, in Latin America, in Europe, in Africa, that students there routinely engage in curriculum and instruction in their schools in more than one language and do well.
So is the focus on multilingual ability? I mean, I think there are lots of colleges that require second language, you know, students to have taken second languages in high school. What is the difference between the focus on studying a second language in junior high or high school and dual language education or bilingual education?
You want to take this one, Davi?
Sure, I can delve into it just a little bit. I think when we speak to dual language education, we're talking about true proficiency in multiple languages. What that means to us is the ability to write it, to read it, to speak it, and to think in that language. When we talk about capturing a second language in college, I think there are many people who can speak to that experience and say, you know, I took Spanish 3 years in college, and I remember how to say hola y buenos días, and that's it. And so it doesn't really truly develop a true proficiency in that second language. And so I believe that would be the biggest distinction between the two.
Is that true proficiency something that has to be achieved during the younger years when that language learning capacity of the brain is so flexible and open and I think of the like sponge-like and ready to absorb a language on that level of proficiency as opposed to memorize and learn grammatical rules?
David can help with this,
yeah,
I think,
sure.
but I would probably say no. I think if people want to learn a second language as adults, they can. Mm. And the reason why sometimes it's a little easier to learn it as an adult, what becomes easier as an adult is the ability to learn how to read and probably write in that second language. What becomes more difficult is to speak it because of the lack of opportunity sometimes to practice that oral language in the second language. And mm-hmm. David, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think it might be a good opportunity to talk a little bit about the historical context of foreign language courses at the high school level. I mean, this is something that didn't come into being until after World War II, when we realized that the importance of learning the language of our enemies, if you will, and our allies, for that matter. And it was actually the Department of Defense that began to pump millions of dollars, and now billions of dollars, into these programs. Unfortunately, just a small percentage of the students that take Spanish in high school, for example, unless it's a heritage language for them, those of us who took it in high school, like myself, we really didn't come out with any real level of fluency, maybe a passive fluency, and we understood some things. And as David wonderfully put out, you know, I knew how to say hola, and I knew that the H was silent, and I could say buenos dias and other salutations. But other than that, it was really nothing of context that I learned.
Well, and there is. I mean, I studied French in junior high and high school. Mm-hmm. I'm from New Mexico. Don't ask me why I chose French. I think it was very kind of foreign feeling, whereas Spanish was much more familiar to me. But I studied for a long time, but I didn't actually get the experience to speak on a regular basis, as you mentioned, David, the oral ability, until I did a semester abroad in West Africa when I was in college, and I had to kind of relearn everything in an active way instead of in that, you know, textbook reading and writing kind of way. And it was amazing how you learn to experience your own existence in a different way through another language.
Absolutely. And that's where we always talk about. We don't talk about language and culture exclusively when we talk about developmental bilingual, including dual language education. You get to understand who you are more by learning the language and the culture that's attached to that language of other people in your community. And that's a real advantage. There is an advantage, and this is something that our other countries have known for quite some time, that the brain research tied to learning a language or acquiring a language shows us that the optimum time for learning more than one language is birth to 6 years of age. In fact, you're born with the ability to make the utterances of over 6,000 languages. And so the brain has the capacity to develop more than one language. The issue is that our brain is very well wired, that beginning at birth, it immediately starts to look at what is necessary for this young human to survive, to thrive, to be successful. And it begins to turn all of its energies towards those things that are identified early on. So if we identify one language as the only language of importance, then it's going to place all of its resources towards that. But if we say, no, actually two, three, four languages are important, then the brain will, in essence, remain open to developing those four languages.
Well, I wanted to ask, too, about the growing body of research on the way the brain is affected by bilingualism. How does this factor into your work developing dual language education programs? We're talking about, you know, there was an article in the New York Times, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, talking about delaying the onset of Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. maintaining cognitive functions in a more successful way for truly bilingual individuals than for people who had, you know, studied French in high school like I did and then not use it continuously throughout adult life. How does that, you know, the kind of effect of bilingualism on the brain impact what you do in developing education programs?
Do you remember that research, David, from Dr. Genesee a few years ago shared with us?
I remember visiting with her, but I'm going to let you take that okay. question because of your recent work with many of those issues.
Yeah, for the last 4 or 5 years now, we've seen this body of research coming out of Canada that continues to grow, and it's showing that aging folks who are in assisted living homes or nursing homes, as we sometimes refer to them, that they've been able to look at thousands of people that are in these homes and look at when was the point that Alzheimer's or other dementias began to set in. And they found out that for multilinguals, those who spoke two or more languages, the average time for dementia or Alzheimer's to set in was actually 4.5 years later than for a monolingual. And it tells us something about how speaking, utilizing, exercising the brain with more than one language kind of keeps the brain more limber, more healthy, if you will. And I do want to make a point, though. It's not necessarily oral languages. They've also looked at music and high-functioning mathematicians, for example, that can also be considered a language as well. The more fun research, I would say, in the last year that we've heard about is this idea that they've taken young adults, high school to college age, and they've put them into simulators for driving automobiles, and they've given them tasks to do besides driving, like changing the radio, using their cell phone, eating, drinking coffee, texting. And they found
that, distract yourself,
yes,
in a sense, right?
Exactly.
But not actually on the road.
And although I must make the point up front for my college-age children, that
this does not allow you to text while driving just because you're bilingual.
Do not try this at home. But even though there was a negative impact on the ability to handle the vehicle with all participants, they found that the multilingual students, or young adults rather, did much better at multitasking while driving than the monolingual. So there's a couple of really interesting things that are...
Don't do it, but think about what it means, right?
And what I love about this research and support for what we do is that if you talk to the brain researchers, you'll find out that many of them who are now hot and focused on issues of language development and learning will tell you that they never were really interested in multilingualism. They kind of stumbled upon it, and they're just realizing that this is a really cool, you know, thing to study at this time. So,
listeners, are you bilingual? How has this affected your life? Did you study a language in high school and then not use it? And how has that affected your life? We'd like to hear from you this morning. The number to call in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866 or send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. Let's take a few calls. Dorian in Albuquerque. Good morning, Dorian. We'd like to hear what you have to say this morning. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate your conversation this morning, and I just wanted to chime in because I actually teach at a dual language school here in Albuquerque. I teach fifth grade, and I just wanted to let your listeners know that dual language education is the best option we have for children who are native speakers of English and also native speakers of Spanish. At my school, we have... The majority of our children are coming into the program to develop their English skills, but we also have a fair percentage of students who come from English-speaking families who are interested in being bilingual, and they're learning Spanish alongside children who are learning English from them. And I've never been in a school where there's such a positive dynamic of multicultural cooperation. You're speaking a lot to the brain research and some of the benefits on the brain that this type of educational model has, and I wanted to speak to that also. When children learn to speak in two languages and think in two languages at an early age, they become much more familiar with thinking figuratively, the idea that there is more than one name for something or more than one way to say something, more than one way to express yourself. It really expands their thinking, and I've just seen nothing but positive benefits from this kind of model. I teach with another teacher who teaches exclusively in Spanish, and I teach in English. We trade our students about every hour, so they get every subject in both English and Spanish throughout the year, and I really enjoy working there, and I hope to see programs like this continue to expand around the country because our Spanish-speaking population is only going to continue to expand, and I see this as a really positive way to integrate the children culturally and linguistically.
So as Dorian just explained, this hour switching from English to Spanish instruction, I think the thing that I'm trying to wrap my brain around is the idea that dual language education is, you know, science in Spanish or math in Spanish and math in English and science in English as opposed to a French class. Right? That it's, am I understanding that correctly? And that the active use of language to do another type of learning is part of the process.
Right. And language development, actually, in this case, in a dual language classroom, is actually the vehicle for teaching and acquiring concept knowledge in those areas. So there's a very specific set of strategies, a very specific protocol that schools learn in order to be able to make instruction comprehensible in the student's second language or in the weaker language. That's a kind of a poor word to use, weak, but
dominant.
Or the non-dominant language, we can say, any given time. And we call that scaffolding, we call that sheltering. So,
can you give an example of what a lesson might look like? What kind of homework would a student bring home? How would that look different or feel different to a student or to a parent watching their student partake in the class?
Well, I think one thing that's important to know is that when you send homework home or you set an expectation for a student to perform an academic task, it's usually in one language. It's either in their first or second language. You're not going to find the worksheets. You're not going to find the homework coming home in both languages, for example. You're really pushing them to digest, to grapple with, to wrestle conceptually and linguistically with the material you're putting before them. Now, the burden falls on the teacher to make that input comprehensible and to set up the activity that the student's going to do so their output is also scaffold, if you will. It's very, very interesting. So in other words, in the bottom line is that I'm not going to teach as a fifth grade teacher or as a first grade teacher as I once was in the dual language classroom. I'm not going to teach the same exact lesson in both languages. They're going to be scaffold. David, did you have something to add to that?
Well, you know, Elaine and David, I just want to kind of take this in a little different direction because what we're speaking to here has been basically English-Spanish dual language programs. But in the state of New Mexico, it means much more than that, especially in regards to native languages, whether it be Navajo, Tewa, Tiwa, Keres, the various languages spoken among the Pueblos. And that needs to also be taken into account when we talk about bilingual education or dual language education in New Mexico, in that there are many of the tribes who are now working very hard to ensure that their languages are healthy and maintained. Many of them are going through what we call language recovery programs because of this. I call it the English-only movement. Many of our native people here are looking at having to go in and bring back the language to their people. And so that's another issue that we want to throw into the mix when we talk about dual language and bilingual education in the state of New Mexico.
Thanks, David. I want to come back to this point about the diversity of linguistic experiences that students in New Mexico have. I want to take a few calls first, though. Let's go to Glenn in Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you so much for this program. I studied four languages as a seminarian, never to speak them, and got so frustrated. And I went to Cuernavaca, Mexico, to a language school in 69, and for 3 months intensively studied, and then went to a Peace Corps in Venezuela, and lived with Venezuelans, and about 6 months later, I started feeling comfortable enough, and I have a son who's done very much the same thing and now working with a theater group in Mexico, and it's just opened his whole life experience as it did for me, and I encourage folks in the KUNM listening audience to seriously consider immersing. I think immersing is the best way, just maybe even go to El Paso and find a school. When I taught in APS, my first assignment at Eugene Field, I had 8 students who had come from Mexico, puro español, no English, and those 8 students were some of the best of my students out of my 28 fourth and fifth grade double grade class, and halfway through the year, after just 6 months, those kids were working at speaking English. By the end of the year, they were bilingual, and it wasn't this dual situation as your previous caller talked about. So I think motivation is important. Yesterday, I spoke to a lady from one of our pueblos who's grieving that her daughter is not able to speak the Pueblo language. She can understand it, and a wife who teaches on that Pueblo says that a lot of the kids are in this situation. There isn't the desire, the motivation to speak a language, even though they're around that language all the time. So I think our desire to really get into another language helps. And I am just so grateful personally for myself and my sons and other people I can speak to in Spanish. As a kid, my grandmother came from Germany. My dad and his brothers and my grandma all spoke German, and they didn't teach me to do it. And I really grieve that I lost out on another language and the culture that went with that. So
Thanks, Glenn. We're talking about dual language education programs and bilingualism and the ability to speak multiple languages. Joining us this morning to talk about this, David Rogers from the Dual Language Education New Mexico Organization, and David Briceño. He is with the New Mexico Association for Bilingual Education. If you'd like to join the conversation, you have a comment about your experience as a bilingual person or your experience in a dual language education program or your thoughts on the topic, please give a call. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Saggio's, homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
I actually got this email. You siren, stop me before I bid again. I'm having way too much fun bidding and I'm becoming compulsive about checking the bids. Yes, I actually got this email. KUNM's online auction may be habit-forming. Do not combine with other shopping compulsions. If you love art or animals or pampering yourself or dining out or finding unique Valentine's Day gifts, click through to the auction from KUNM.org. Shop responsibly.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. I have David Rogers here in the studio with us this morning from Dual Language Education New Mexico and David Briceño from the New Mexico Association for Bilingual Education on the phone in from Clovis. I did invite a representative from the State Public Education Department to participate. We may or may not hear from them today. And we're talking about dual language education programs. I'd like to take a few more calls. If you are trying to call in at this time, our lines are full. Just pay attention to when we finish taking a call. That'll indicate that a line is freeing up, and just try again. You can also send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org, and we'll try to get your comment on that way. Let's go to Clifton in Albuquerque. Good morning, Clifton. You're on the air.
Good morning, Elaine. Another wonderful program. Congratulations. Bienvenidos, David. Guten Morgen. And I meant to say bonjour. I want to publicly thank my mom for forcing me to take Spanish all the way through high school. My father was living in Latin America at the time, and so she said, you're going to go down there and speak it. And sure enough, I did. I have found, I guess I really did the immersion program that the other caller suggested late in my teens and then throughout the course of my subsequent life working in bilingual media, and have become pretty effective at speaking Spanish. And over the course of my life, I really feel as though the two languages have, I can feel how they have helped me have a broader approach to problem solving, as your caller suggested. I also am interested in the idea of neuroplasticity and the fact that we actually can effectively rewire our brains. And so some of this discussion regarding how we can retard advances in Alzheimer's and things like that strike me as very important. And I guess I'm also wanting to encourage adults who feel that they may be past their opportunity to learn a second language to go ahead and give it a try, because not only will it, keep your brain active, but I think it really can be done.
Thanks for your call this morning, Clifton. Let's hear from Anne in Albuquerque. Good morning, Anne. You're on the air.
Hi. Again, I appreciate that you're having this discussion. This seems to me like such an important thing to talk about. And I guess I just have a couple of things to say. One, that I was always interested in languages as a kid and traveled in my early 20s in Mexico and then came back to the States and got a degree in Spanish. And not a bilingual teacher, but I am a teacher and use Spanish, of course, every day in my job. And I would just have to say that knowing Spanish is so much broadened my horizons, both socially and professionally. And I feel like to so many people, monolingual Spanish speakers are sort of invisible, that our Latino immigrants are sort of invisible. And they're not invisible. They're people that are taking part in our communities and participating in lots of different important ways. And that speaking Spanish and sort of having access to communicate with that world has been such a wonderful part of my life. And one more little story is that when my kids were little, I made a point of really speaking Spanish to them as much as I could. And my husband is a native Spanish speaker, so they were bilingual. And I remember being in public places and waiting in line or something and conversing in Spanish with my young children, and older people looking at them with so much sort of nostalgia and affection, I suppose, because so many older people here in Albuquerque spoke Spanish as young children but got their hand slapped by the nuns or got in trouble for speaking Spanish anywhere near school. And so they didn't teach Spanish to their own children. And then, of course, their own grandchildren then don't speak Spanish, only speak English. And I felt so much sort of, I think, the sadness around the loss and also the punishment that people face because they happen to speak another language that they were taught at home. So that's the only comments I really have to make, is that I just would encourage anybody to learn any other language, and particularly Spanish, which I feel like living in the United States, that's a huge part of our population and a huge part of communicating with people. So that's all I have to say.
Yeah, yeah. This idea of, you mentioned earlier, David, the idea of kind of nationalism with respect to English in the U.S. and the focus on English only as all that is necessary. And then you mentioned how the brain is only going to devote resources to that which is necessary for survival and success. David Briceño, I wanted to come back to you and ask you to talk a little bit more about the diversity of students in New Mexico when we're talking about dual language education programs. And what does the term English language learner mean? Who fits into that category? And the diversity of linguistic experiences, if you could break that down for us a little bit and kind of flesh it out. I think sometimes there may be a stereotype that English language learners are children of immigrant parents who don't speak English, and that is the only kind of category of people who fit.
Okay, that's a great question, and we really need to explore first how we identify students as English language learners in New Mexico. The first step in the process is each school district is mandated by OCR mandates to survey student or the parents as they register their students into the school to find out if a language other than English is spoken in the home. If they indicate that to any degree that there is another language spoken in the home, then the student must be administered a language proficiency exam. That assessment is a very basic assessment to see how proficient they are in English. And it looks at the four skills, that being reading, writing, listening, and speaking. And so once they're given that assessment, then it's determined whether or not they are English language learners. And you're correct. It is a very, very diverse population, one that, it is not just immigrant children or children of immigrant parents.
Well, and it's like two-thirds, I believe the information on the Dual Language Education of New Mexico website is that two-thirds of New Mexico students qualify as English language learners.
Absolutely.
Which
and,
is,
you know, one of the things that's really interesting, one year at a district I worked at, one of the schools made the mistake of giving the assessment to all students. We found out that the majority of students coming into that kindergarten class were tagged as English language learners because of the they didn't have the vocabulary development that required them that would make them proficient in English according to this assessment.
Even if English was spoken in the home.
Absolutely,
right.
English only was spoken in the home. We're finding that many of our students are could be tagged as English language learners. So it's a tag that we have to be very, very careful with and understand that when we speak to that, it is not an immigrant issue, but an issue of the diverse populations that we serve.
So what are some of the challenges that are different for children of immigrant parents versus children of bilingual parents who perhaps have been, you know, in the U.S. for families have been in the U.S. for generations compared to Native American families and the challenges that some of those communities face, as you mentioned before, with maintaining language knowledge in a community? How is that different when dual language programs are being developed?
Well, here's the big thing, I'm glad you brought that up because it comes to that question where that caller stated that children were not wanting to speak their native language. And you know, I encountered that when I first was in the classroom back in the early 80s, teaching in a bilingual classroom, and I just could not understand why kids would not be excited about learning Spanish.
Or me not wanting to study Spanish, but choosing to study French instead.
Right. And here's I did a little bit of research into that, and it's a psychological thing in that it's the adults and the institutions around them that will determine the status of the language. And when it comes to Spanish, many times the status of that language over the years has been one, and I think Newt Gingrich stated stated it best in 2007 in a speech he gave. He stated that that Spanish was the language of the ghetto. That's a direct quote from him. Now,
I think I've heard a little bit about this quote, and if I remember correctly, he was talking about English not being the language of the ghetto. I think he may have. I'm not exactly sure. So let me just say to listeners, check up on that because I think there may be. I think he did come back and say, no, I was saying English is a language of opportunity as opposed to Spanish is a language of the ghetto. But I understand exactly where you're going with that.
What I'm trying to point out here is the mindset that comes from many adults and institutions that surround children today and as it did 20 years ago. And that is that we are an English-only country, and that is the only language that we need to learn.
Absolutely.
That being
totally
the case, kids pick up on that mindset, pick up on that attitude. And so, naturally, they're going to say, you know, they may not say it out of respect to their parents, but internally, I think what they're stating is, you know, I really don't want to learn this language because it's not important to the people that make decisions that matter.
Yeah.
And so when you develop dual language programs, what does happen within that school is the status of all languages are maintained at the same level.
Let's take a few more calls. Arf in Socorro, good morning. You're on the air, and thanks for holding.
Yes, it's a very interesting program, as all your programs are. Thank you very much. Concerning the utility of teaching Spanish, or teaching mathematics and science in Spanish, I can understand it through, say, the third grade or so, maybe even the fourth. But I have a student who is going to go to the University of Barcelona in Spain this year. She's going to be doing her graduate studies there. And just I'd like you to comment on the fact that all of the courses there are taught in English. This is in Spain, and all of the courses there are taught in English. And the obvious reason is because all of the materials in science and mathematics are in English. Thank you.
Thanks. That's an interesting question about the body of material that educators have to use to do the educating. How does that limit the multilingual opportunities?
Well, it's kind of this surprised me that this comment because there are instructional materials at all levels, and I can give you a good example. Because
is this a choice that this particular university has made then
to offer courses
in English?
Well, I don't know. I don't know exactly which university, but I'm going to assume also though that there's probably the equivalent offered in Spanish as well. It probably has an international focus. But for example, one of the challenges that face dual language programs and developmental bilingual education programs in general is that if you're going to educate a child in two languages, they need to have as high a level in the non-English language of the program as the English language. And so for example, a rule of thumb, and those of us who have survived high school Spanish know that what schools are pushing for is AP-level courses in all math and science included.
It's the advanced placement courses where you can get college credit.
That's exactly
for
right.
For taking an exam after studying in high school. You can take an exam and earn some college credit for work that you've done in high school.
So that's not to say that everything would be taken in Spanish, for example. But those listening in is what dual language and developmental bilingual programs are really pushing for is the ability for students to pass that AP Spanish class by eighth grade. That's the level of Spanish that we're looking to develop here. So they can go on and be successful in taking physics or calculus, for example, in Spanish if they choose and if it's offered in their high school.
So I have a comment from somebody via email. Jill, who is a linguistics professor, says New Mexico has one of the only American Sign Language academies. She says deaf bilinguals activate signs even while reading. This is the same as hearing bilinguals who activate one language while reading or listening. It's pulling another language into this conversation. Let's take a few more calls to Debbie in Albuquerque. Good morning, Debbie. You're on the air.
Good morning. Well, that
kind of answered your question.
My daughter, as lots of young mothers are these days, taught my grandson sign language from a very young age, like, you know, a month or two. And now he's learning to speak, and he's using both. And I just wondered if that also offered the same benefits in later years if he keeps that up as you're talking about with Spanish or French or German.
Well, and I've also heard something about how teaching children to use signs before they become speakers is also an opportunity to teach children how to communicate before they're able to communicate verbally, and that often can build their ability to feel heard and understood and get what they need. And how does sign language fit in either David or David? Are there differences or similarities with sign language?
Well, it is a language. And in fact, we had not too long ago, David, I think you remember, we had an interesting question from one of the districts that we support through technical assistance that was asking if bilingual education funds provided by the state could be used for a signing program that they wanted to instill in their school. And I remember that the issue, I think, ended up, David, you can help me remember this, that there were funds available through state funding, but it shouldn't come from the bilingual pot, if you will.
That's correct. There was that issue of trying to find resources for students that were learning or needing to learn sign, and there are some other funding sources other than the bilingual funds that are available through the state.
Mm-hmm. And I have a special needs child, just as a side, that has that speaks three languages, and one of it is sign, and she's limited in her her verbal ability, and just as a funny story, last week she was I actually couldn't understand her English or Spanish, but when she began to sign, I realized she was yelling at me in three languages. So it's quite interesting.
Let's take another call. Carlo in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I'm so happy to be on your show because I hear all these good stories about bilingual education and everything. I know Spanish, and I also went on a scholarship, a government scholarship, to go learn Arabic called the National Security Language Initiative for Youth. And by learning the language, Arabic, it had opened up a whole new opportunity for me in my life and everything. And so, I mean, like, we talk about kids learning, you know, Portuguese, Spanish, and French and German. I think we also need to concentrate on learning, you know, critical languages like Arabic, Chinese, and Russian, or something like that. So it's been a really great experience to just, you know, learn all these languages, because Spanish has so many roots from Arabic. So I was able to find out, you know, a lot of words there and everything. But I think, you know, bilingual education is really important, especially in the United States. New Mexico. So,
hey, Carla, let me ask you a question. So we've been talking a little bit about sometimes how students think, oh, you know, I don't want to learn that language. And I think for many students, Arabic might be one of those languages. I don't want to learn Arabic. I want to learn Spanish. I want to learn French or something like that. How did you get interested in learning Arabic? What sparked that for you?
What happened is that my family's from the Philippines. My aunt, my mom's sister, is married to different men from different places. So my mom married an American, and everyone else married somebody else, but my other aunt married an Egyptian. So my first interest in the Arabic language was when I had Egyptian cousins speak to me and everything. But then after that, I just, you know, fell in love with the Arabic culture, and I started exploring, and I wanted to go to the Middle East. And so when I got there to Egypt the first time, It was just amazing. I just wanted to immerse myself into the environment and everything. And at some times, you know, Arabic is a hard language, but at the same time, it's not like Spanish you can just learn here. You have to actually, you know, be driven to learn it because it's all, you have to relearn your whole entire vocabulary. But in itself, it's a good exercise for kids. I mean, because I've learned Arabic, I've actually improved my English. I've actually improved, like, my Spanish and everything, and thinking ability and, like, memorization skills, because it just helps you learn a lot. And so once you can learn this language, once you, you know, get the drive to learn it, it just continues on. And currently I'm in Arabic class at UNM, so it's pretty cool.
Hey, well, good luck with your class, Carlo.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Maya in Santa Fe. Good morning, Maya. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a few comments. The first thing, I grew up in the Midwest to a Colombian father and a Mexican-American mother who, for various reasons, oh, my baby's crying, so I'll be really brief.
It's a sweet sound.
It is.
Did not speak Spanish to me as a child, which I think is very unfortunate because it gave me limited.
Hey, Maya, why don't you hang on a minute, and we'll come back to you in a few minutes and see if we can get you so we can hear what you're saying. Your little guy seems to be kind of upset. We're talking about dual language education on the KUNM call-in show this morning. David Rogers is here in the studio. He is with the Dual Language Education of New Mexico organization. David Briseño is executive director of the New Mexico Association for Bilingual Education, and he's joining us on the phone. We'll be right back to take a few more of your calls. Stay tuned. This is the KUNM call-in show. We'll be right back.
Going to college in the fall? FAFSA free-for-all events offer complimentary professional assistance statewide to apply for over $154 billion in federal financial aid. Visit FAFSAfreeforall.org to find a nearby event and learn how it's possible to win one of 60 $500 scholarships. FAFSA free-for-all, it's a ticket to paying for college. FAFSAfreeforall.org, a message from the tax-exempt New Mexico College Access Network.
The KUNM Radio Board meets the first Tuesday of every month, and you're invited to attend. Meetings are held in Scholes Hall near the Duck Pond on the UNM campus and begin at 6 p.m. on the first Tuesday of every month. Every meeting includes an open mic segment on the agenda if you would like to speak to the Radio Board. For more information, 277-4806 or email kunm@kunm.org. That's 277-4806 or kunm@kunm.org.
I'm Elaine Baumgartel. It's 8:45. This is the KUNM call-in show. We're talking about dual language education in New Mexico, and I'd like to go back to our phone lines. They're full right now. If you're trying to get through either on our local phone number, which is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque, or toll-free 877-899-5866, just keep trying, and I'll try to move through some calls so that more of you can get through. Let's go to Jose in Albuquerque. Good morning, Jose. You're on the air.
Good morning. Brief comment about the gentleman who called regarding the lack of Spanish language math books at the University of Barcelona. As we know, Spanish is spoken by hundreds of millions of people around the world, and I'm absolutely certain that proper mathematics, higher mathematics textbooks are available in Spanish. The fact is that the reason classes at the University of Barcelona are taught in English is that in Barcelona, they do not speak Spanish. In fact, they hate the Spanish language because they were subjugated by Franco for 30 years. They speak Catalan, which is specific only to that region. Hence, there are probably few textbooks available in Catalan.
Hey, thanks for that clarification, Jose.
Sure. Bye.
Let's go to, it's either Martin or Martin at Jemez Pueblo. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Just fine. Thanks for your call this morning. How would you like to add to the conversation?
Well, actually, you know, I was born and raised in Boston, Massachusetts, and I never really taught my language until I moved back down to the reservation. But I'm just trying to say that, you know, a lot of these things all happen because, like, you know, people, they say, like, oh, I wish they could speak English or something like that when you go up to, like, a McDonald's drive-thru or, like, anything like that. And I think to myself, they don't call it New Mexico for nothing. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm just trying to add to the conversation, you know? But, you see, as soon as I moved back to Jemez, I took Wallace, as we call it. As soon as I moved back there, I took in as much as I could, and I tried to learn the language because I thought it was awesome. I look at English as my second language. You know what I mean? I want to learn my native culture, my language my language before I would learn another language. So I do speak Haymus, and my children are they're half Navajo and half Haymus. So I'm thinking now we got trilingual because I want them to learn their Navajo language and I want them to learn Haymus, and they of course everybody has to learn English, you know.
So how would do you have access to dual language programs in schools for your kids, or is this something that you're doing primarily through your social network and in your community outside of schools?
Well, actually, Navajo is, my kids live on the Navajo Res, because but it's spoken over there, and it's spoken when they come to Haymus, so they're learning, you know what I mean? Both, and then English is spoken at school, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So at the schools in Haymus, they teach the language over there. They actually try to emphasize and put more, they teach Haymus as the first language. So, I know they speak English and stuff like that, but, I mean, like, they try to teach the children about, like corn, you know, how the, like, from the earth, you know, and stuff like that. So, I mean, like, the schools really emphasize on, like, the native language of Haymus, you know, over there. Like, the Head Starts and stuff like that, they try to teach their kids young. And that's good, I think, because they're eventually going to learn English no matter what, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very important that they learn their native language first. And that's all I'm trying to say. But like I said, I was born and raised in Boston, and I was spoke to in my native tongue. But it's just that when I came to Haymus, I absorbed a lot more. I learned quick, and now it's like, well, actually, I think it was like installed in my blood. You know, as soon as I heard it, I knew what they were talking about, and now I participate and do all kinds of stuff for the native people. But like I said, a lot of these people, like I said, when I go to like to McDonald's or something, they always say like, I wish that city would speak English. But like I said, I always think to myself, they don't call it New Mexico for nothing.
Hey, thanks for your call, Martin.
Oh yeah, you have a good day.
You too. Thanks. Let's go back to Maya. I think the baby has relaxed a little bit. Hi, Maya. Thanks.
Hi,
thanks for hanging
that.
On there. That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Go ahead. Can you kind of recap what you were talking about?
Sure.
And if you can,
I was saying that I grew up in the Midwest to a Colombian father and a Mexican American mother, who for whatever reasons didn't speak Spanish to me as a baby, so I didn't learn early on. But fortunately, where I grew up, there was a Spanish language immersion elementary school where we learned English, of course, in English and spelling and vocab and whatnot. But science, social studies, and math was taught in Spanish by native speakers. All the teachers had to be from Latin America or Spain. So that was wonderful, and that's how I learned. And I would say that the majority of the students there came from Spanish language speaking homes. So I was also exposed to wonderful amounts of culture. And this leads me to my second comment, which was the other day I was with a group of mothers. We were all hanging out with our babies, and she said she had hesitancy in sending her children to Santa Fe public schools because of the culture shock they would receive being exposed to Mexican-American and Mexican children, which I thought was a very odd comment because it was completely opposite from my experience as
mm-hmm.
a child.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Maya.
Sure.
We're talking about dual language education in New Mexico, and we just have a few moments left. I want to try to get through a couple more calls. So as I take your call, if you can keep your comments pretty succinct so I can get through all of you, that'd be great. Let's go to Maki in Santa Fe. Good morning, Maki.
Good morning. Thank you for this show. And my comment is that I agree with those people that are saying that more than one language in one's repertoire is a definite asset, whether it's Spanish or any other language. And it's sad to me to hear of people saying they were not speaking their native language, whatever that was, at home. My first language was Russian. Second language was French because I was sent to kindergarten not speaking a word of French, picked up French, no problem. And my third language was Spanish because we moved to Argentina when I was 8. and I picked up Spanish very quickly. Reading helped. By then I was reading everything a lot, you know, comic books for starts, and then books. And then we came to America when I was 15.
And you picked up English.
I didn't speak English.
But you picked it up, right?
And I picked it up in high school.
Yeah.
And I really didn't skip a beat. I mean, as far as science or math or anything.
Thanks for your call this morning, Maki. I'm sorry to cut you off. I want to try to get one more call in here. Thanks so much for calling. And,
Thank you. Of course, feel
free to send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. One last call this morning, Donna in Las Vegas. If you can keep your comment short, that'd be great. And you're on the air.
Well, thank you very much for taking the call. We certainly enjoy your program every morning. I would just like to succinctly say that there are here people in this room that feel that the way that America oppresses our own people is by limiting our ability to speak to other, our cultures, the people who have come to this country, the Indians that first were in this country, that we might actually learn the language of Jemez or Navajo, learn the languages of the Irish, the Russian, the French. The people who came to this country, rather than oppressing them, sometimes both socially, culturally, and physically, from speaking their own language, which certainly happened here in New Mexico not very long ago. And my kudos to the Montessori method of education, which has deliberately had at least a dual, if not a multicultural, language base in that form of education, and that we in America wake up to the reality that speaking more than one language, five other languages, gives us the ability to understand there's more than one word for freedom.
Mm. Nice. Thanks, Donna.
Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. We also got an email from Dr. Elsie Diaz. She is a head administrator for Corrales International School, and she says that last night their school lottery demonstrated the high interest in dual language education. She said they had 361 applications for just 8 openings, and that the wait list for their kindergarten class is 134 students on the wait list. They teach Spanish and Mandarin Chinese. I want to wrap up the show with my two Davids, David and David, with a question about, so we've had this conversation about dual language education as being the best possible option, yet what are the barriers to implementing dual language education programs thoroughly throughout communities in New Mexico? I'm guessing money is part of it, as we have testing that focuses on reading and math, reading in English, right? And so, David Rogers, maybe you can make a point, and then I'll come to you, David, and we'll wrap up the show.
Yes, beginning with David's first comments about identifying students that need more assistance with learning English. You know, it's one thing to identify them, but then once they're identified, what kind of programs are we offering? And that comes down to resources and money. And I just wanted to, I think there's been an imbalance today in this conversation about us sort of focusing more on the first two benefits of dual language, which is the academic and the linguistic benefits of it, but maybe not so much on the cultural side. And so I just wanted to say that the big challenge is for us to make sure dual language is in place for our Native American brothers and sisters, because for them, this is not just an academic and a business benefit for them to become multilingual in their native language, plus English, plus maybe another language, but it's the preservation of their culture, of their tradition. And for that native person that was referred to who may not have learned their language, it's not just the language that they don't have a command on. It's everything in their traditions, their dance, their prayer that they're not having access to.
David Briceño, final comments from you this morning.
Sure. I think one of the most beautiful things we have in New Mexico is we have been designated an English plus state, which means that we recognize the importance of multiple languages and multicultures that exist here, and we're very diverse. When you talk about barriers to developing quality programs, resources are one issue, but then I think the educational leadership that exists, that is currently in place in many, many regions in our state, do not support the development of dual language programs. So we kind of have to change that mindset, that culture that exists among many, and we have to truly look at ensuring that mandates for testing and that type of thing do not take over what we do for our children, and that we always work in the best interest of our kids and their families.
And New Mexico's application for a waiver from the No Child Left Behind Act is being revised in order to address some of these concerns with respect to English language learners and different ethnic and racial groups in New Mexico. So we'll be looking to see how that goes for the Public Education Department as they work with the federal government to develop that waiver. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks so much for joining us. Engineering this morning by Chloe Volek, call screening by Michael Hess, and our news intern is Andy Lyman. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We'll be back next week, Thursday morning at 8. You can listen to other call-in shows online on our website, KUNM.org, and you can send us emails if you have comments or questions about the show or suggestions for show topics. And that email address is callinshow@KUNM.org. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is KUNM.